I thought I was in control. I built the system. I gave the keynote. I spoke about ethical persuasion like it was gospel. And then Rowan walked in and rewrote me, one decision, one compliment, one mirrored phrase at a time. This isn't just a story about betrayal. It's a confession about the comfort of being controlled and the quiet war of reclaiming your own voice. Because the most dangerous manipulators don't raise their voices. They finish your sentences. If you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform now, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. The invitation. It didn't feel like a setup. That's the part that haunts me. There was no red flag, no gut scream, no off note in the melody of it all. Just a warm room, a name tag, a tray of untouched croissants, and a man whose presence felt like gravity with a face. His name was Rowan Hollow. And he didn't introduce himself like someone eager to sell. He introduced himself like someone who already knew I'd say yes. "Great talk," he said, nodding at the stage where I'd just delivered a lecture on ethical influence and modern persuasion frameworks. "You didn't overperform. That's rare in this crowd." It was a compliment too specific to ignore. He wore a gray blazer with no pocket square, shoes that looked expensive but lived in, and a wristwatch with no logo. The kind of man who stripped away identifiers because he knew his weapon was conversation. We talked for 17 minutes. I remember because I checked the time before and after. I had a flight to catch, a pitch to review, a team waiting on updates. But somehow, that 17-minute chat changed the next 17 months of my life. He didn't ask for anything that first day. That was his art. Rowan asked about my framework. Said he liked the way I described trust as a transaction that begins with emotional familiarity. Asked me what hadn't worked in the past. Nodded slowly when I mentioned my previous co-founder ghosting just before a merger. "People don't leave ideas," he said. "They leave people who make them feel replaceable." I should have known right then. No stranger is that precise with your pain unless they've studied the fault lines. But I didn't feel like prey. I felt like a peer. Like I'd finally met someone who understood that leadership is about navigating chaos while hiding your own. He got it. Or so I thought. We exchanged contacts. No pressure. Just, let's keep the conversation going. That night, I lay in my hotel room with the lights off, replaying his words. Something about his phrasing lodged itself in me like a lyric. Not flashy. Just real. A week later, we had drinks in a dim lounge near my office. He'd flown in on business, but didn't name the client. He didn't need to. That's the thing with manipulators. They don't demand your attention. They earn your loyalty by never asking for it out loud. He asked about the new project I was building, a startup designed to analyze leadership communication in real time using AI feedback loops. It was still an early prototype, but I found myself telling him things I hadn't told anyone. How I feared being a hypocrite. How I'd built tools to measure emotional truth, but couldn't always spot lies in real time. How leadership didn't feel like a gift. It felt like surveillance on yourself. He smiled gently. "You're not wrong to feel that," he said. "People like us, we carry too much signal. We need places to exhale." It wasn't a line. It was a sedative. He listened like the world stopped moving until I finished each sentence. It wasn't love. It was deeper, stranger. Something I'd come to understand later as cognitive intimacy. The way a manipulator makes your thoughts feel safer in their presence than in your own mind. He didn't push. Didn't pitch. But 2 weeks later, he sent me an encrypted link. Just a short file, 3 slides and a message. A thought on how your product could anchor influence scoring in real-time leadership engagements. Let me know if I'm overstepping. He wasn't. He was walking right through the door I'd left cracked open. The one labeled finally, someone who gets it. By the time I invited him into the project officially, I didn't feel like I was being manipulated. I felt like I was being understood. That's how it begins. Not with a threat. Not with a lie. But with a feeling. This person completes the sentence I didn't know I was writing. And that's the most dangerous sentence of all. The mind behind the smile. They say charisma is the ability to make someone feel like they're the only person in the room. But Rowan? Rowan had something darker than charisma. He had gravity. It didn't pull you in. It tilted your axis. He never filled a room. He bent it toward him. Even in silence, he made you want to explain yourself more clearly. Laugh a little longer. Reveal one extra detail. You didn't realize how far you were leaning in until you looked down and saw your toes curled over the edge. I started inviting him to team strategy calls, quietly at first. "He's just sitting in," I told my co-founder. A second pair of eyes. The team didn't push back. He had that effect. He was clean-shaven ambiguity wrapped in tailored wool. No one could pin down his title, so they invented one for him in their minds. Strategic advisor. Consultant. Operational mind. All guesses. All wrong. Rowan wasn't advising. He was embedding. I began to hear his phrasing slip into my own voice during presentations. Instead of saying we're optimizing trust algorithms, I started saying, we're not building a product. We're building a compass for human truth. His words. His rhythm. And I believed them more when they came from me. That's how he worked. Not with volume. With viral ideas, statements that felt too profound to question. He once told me, over whiskey and dim light, the only real control in this world is invisible. The moment they see the strings, the magic breaks. I nodded like I'd just learned something holy. Because manipulators don't walk in and rewrite your story. They hand you a pen and convince you the next sentence was your idea. The first true fracture came during a pitch rehearsal. We were preparing for a series of funding. I had just finalized our story arc, clean, logical, bold, but Rowan slid a new slide into the deck during a break. A case study I'd never approved. Numbers I hadn't verified. A testimonial from a CEO I didn't even recognize. "It's emotional glue," he said casually. "They won't vet it. They'll feel it." I laughed, but something inside me pulled back. I asked, "Is it true?" He tilted his head. "Does it matter?" That moment, that one moment should have been my exit ramp. But I hesitated, because the truth was murky now. The lines were already smudged. He wasn't just in the deck. He was in my head. And when you let someone else define your ethical threshold, you're no longer leading. You're following in disguise. That night, I couldn't sleep. I kept replaying things he'd said over the past few weeks, reframing my memories, how he'd noticed who in my circle challenged me most, and subtly planted doubt around them. "I don't think Sarah's fully on board. Your CTO seems checked out lately. You're the real heart of this. Just be careful who slows your pulse." It sounded supportive, until I realized he was cutting my tethers one at a time. By the end of that quarter, I'd begun confiding in Rowan more than anyone. He knew my fears, my limits, the names of my exes, the reason I hadn't spoken to my brother in 2 years. He knew things I didn't know I'd said, because he asked questions that felt like therapy but functioned like data mining. "What do you regret most? What's the moment you stopped trusting yourself? Would you take back success if it cost you less?" He'd sit in silence after those questions, not because he respected the pause, but because he knew it made you fill it with truth. Manipulators don't pull information. They wait for you to bleed it voluntarily. And Rowan? He never told me a damn thing about himself. He shared images, not experiences. Hints of past companies. Mentions of foreign investors. An anecdote about a yacht that felt too rehearsed. Everything with just enough elegance to keep me guessing. When I asked him once about his family, he smiled and said, "I grew up learning one rule. Trust is what people offer when they think they're safe." That answer should have set something off in me. But it didn't. Not yet. Because I still thought I was in control. I told myself I was using Rowan, that his insights made my team stronger, our narrative tighter, our brand sharper. I thought he was just another tool in my toolbox. But what I didn't realize was, I was already speaking through his framework. I was already doubting the right people. And worse, I was already protecting him in my own mind. That's what no one tells you about manipulation. By the time you start suspecting someone might be dangerous, you've already become their alibi. Blurred lines and buried truths. There's a moment in every manipulation where you stop questioning the other person and start questioning yourself. For me, that moment came on a Tuesday, just after 2 a.m. The office was empty, the city beyond the windows pulsing in soft, quiet blue. A city asleep but breathing. I was staring at our leadership influence dashboard, running simulations, when a string of anomalies caught my eye. Slight misalignments in data access logs. Timestamps that didn't track with our usage patterns. I wasn't even trying to look for Rowan. But his name, it surfaced in the metadata. Accessing internal pitch revisions. Downloading financial slide drafts. Uploading files to an encrypted private drive. It didn't make sense. He didn't have those permissions. He didn't need them. And yet, there he was, 2:13 a.m., server room B access point. Same time zone. Same system. Same ghost. My first instinct? Justify it. Maybe he was prepping backup slides. Maybe I'd given him access and just forgotten. Maybe it was nothing. The rationalization came faster than the concern. That's what shocked me the most. Not that he'd broken protocol, but that my mind refused to name it a betrayal. Because Rowan didn't just manipulate access. He manipulated doubt. He built a structure where every instinct I had had to pass through a mental filter he'd installed. I stared at the log entry like it was a hallucination. I hovered over the file trail. dec_a_variant_final_v6.pptx. My slide. My content. My vision. Restructured under his name. What was worse? It was better. The phrasing had his fingerprints all over it. Clean. Punchy. Persuasive. What if we didn't just analyze influence, but created it? Leadership is no longer a style. It's a dataset. Lines that hit harder. Cut deeper. Converted faster. That's the knife twist of psychological warfare. Sometimes the manipulator doesn't ruin your work. They improve it. So you start asking yourself the wrong question. What if I need him? The next morning, I confronted him. Not with rage. Not with fire. Just confusion wrapped in civility. I noticed you accessed the leadership deck last night. He didn't blink. Yeah, he said calmly. Felt like it needed tightening before next week. Hope that wasn't a problem. The tone wasn't apologetic. It was collaborative. He didn't deny the action. He reframed the intent. I didn't think you had permissions, I said. You shared that folder with me a while back. Or maybe it was a clone. Either way, no secrets between us, right? No secrets. That line sat in my gut like swallowed glass. He looked me straight in the eye, and for a second I saw it. Not panic, not guilt, but testing. He was measuring my reaction. Testing how far he could stretch truth without snapping it. And me. I failed the test. I nodded. Told him I appreciated the initiative. Said I'd review the changes later. Lied through my teeth. Because I didn't want to admit the truth. I was scared to lose him. Not just as a strategist. As a mirror. Rowan didn't just help me lead. He shaped the way I saw myself. And if I removed him, what would I see in the reflection left behind? That week, I started noticing other cracks. Not in the company, but in me. My co-founder Sarah was quieter than usual. Our team meetings felt tense, the energy twisted at the edges. I overheard one of the engineers whisper, "Rowan's not even officially on the team. Why does he have admin keys?" I brushed it off. Told myself they didn't understand. That visionaries always face resistance. That this was what growth looked like. But the truth? I was building a kingdom on borrowed faith. Every decision I made started with, what would Rowan think? Not because he demanded it, he never had to. He made himself the lighthouse in a fog of self-doubt. And I had no idea that behind the light was the flame that would burn it all down. It's strange how silence can scream louder than words. One night, I logged into the server again, checked the new logs, and there it was, a hidden folder, encrypted, labeled, control variants. When I cracked it open using my master key, what I found shattered everything I thought I knew about Rowan's role. Drafts of company vision statements, versions of our brand voice rewritten entirely by him, emails he'd written but never sent, mimicking my voice, mock leadership bios where he was listed as founder. He wasn't advising me. He was rehearsing my erasure, and I had handed him the mic. The echo chamber. The next few days felt like a fever dream, the kind where nothing is technically wrong. The sun still rises, the emails still come, the meetings still happen, but everything feels staged, like I was sleepwalking through a version of my own life written by someone else. And maybe I was. Because once you realize a manipulator has rewritten the script, you start questioning every line that came before. Was the compliment real? Did he mean that advice? Or was I just another chess piece he slid across the board while I mistook him for a teammate? I didn't confront him. Not yet. I watched. And what I saw chilled me. Rowan had created an echo chamber, and I was at the center of it. Subtle moves. Quiet replacements. Invisible rewrites. He'd mirrored my voice in team memos. Rephrased my beliefs in client pitches. Crafted feedback loops where my own words came back to me, slightly altered, wrapped in his tone. It's a disorienting thing, being manipulated by someone who uses your identity as the weapon. At first, I blamed fatigue. Maybe I was just overworked. Paranoid. But then Sarah called me into a side meeting. She looked pale, tired, like she'd been carrying a weight no one could see. "I need to show you something," she said. She pulled up a private email thread between Rowan and one of our investors. It was surreal. In it, he referred to me as a founder in emotional freefall. Said he'd been holding the company together behind the curtain, that my leadership style was brilliant but erratic, and that he'd begun steering the team toward stability. He wasn't just undermining me. He was auditioning for my replacement. And the investor? They hadn't pushed back. In fact, their reply said, "Appreciate the candor. Keep me in the loop." I felt my throat tighten. My fingers shook. This wasn't just manipulation. This was a silent coup. And I'd handed him the keys to the kingdom. That night, I couldn't sleep. Again, I replayed every interaction, every late-night whiskey session, every seemingly vulnerable story Rowan had ever shared with me. And then it hit me. He never actually shared anything real. He never once told me where he grew up, never mentioned his family, never slipped up with a detail that could be verified. His stories were atmospheric, crafted to resonate, not reveal. He didn't tell stories to connect. He told stories to frame my responses. I'd been so focused on the content of what he said, I missed the function of how he said it. Everything was bait. And I'd bitten. Deep. The next day, I changed all internal credentials. Locked down server access. Created a clone environment to monitor behavior without alerting him. It felt like setting traps in my own home. But I needed proof. Undeniable. Clean. That afternoon, he messaged me. "You okay, brother? You seem off today." I stared at the screen for a long time before replying. "Just tired. Thanks for checking in." Lie. He didn't check in because he cared. He checked in because he sensed the shift. Manipulators are hyper-aware of behavioral micro-changes. They have to be. It's how they survive, how they anticipate resistance before it forms. But this time, I was ahead of him. Barely. I spent that week gathering evidence. Server logs. Voice recordings. Slack messages. Every moment I'd ignored, rationalized, or let slide came back under harsh fluorescent light. And with every layer I peeled back, the image sharpened. Rowan hadn't just infiltrated my company. He'd infiltrated my identity. He'd mimicked my strengths to gain trust, predicted my insecurities to gain leverage, then slowly replaced my instincts with his voice in disguise. He didn't conquer me. He rewrote me. And that's the part no one talks about. When you finally escape a manipulator, you don't just lose them. You lose the version of yourself you became in their presence. Because in their world, your choices weren't truly yours. Your beliefs were curated, your confidence leased, your instincts compromised. By the time you walk away, you're not the same person you were before. You're a collection of echoes, and silence has never felt louder. By the end of the week, I had everything I needed. Digital receipts, voice memos, witness accounts, even a video of him speaking in my tone to a client I'd never met. The evidence was clean, but still, I hesitated. Why? Because confronting a manipulator feels like amputating a phantom limb. You know they're toxic. You know they've hurt you. But they were also your mirror, your comfort, your script. And somewhere deep down, you fear that without them, you'll forget how to perform. But I made the call anyway. And the next chapter? That's where the silence ends. And the reckoning begins. The breakers smile. I scheduled the meeting at 7:30 p.m., after hours, after most of the staff had left, after I knew Rowan would be just tired enough to let something slip. He walked in wearing that same unassuming expression. Calm. Disarmed. Neutral, like he always was. He sat across from me, folded his hands, and said, "What's going on, Liam?" My heart was pounding, but I kept my voice steady. "Someone's been accessing internal files under my credentials," I said. I traced the access logs. He didn't even flinch. Instead, he leaned back, looked at me the way a parent looks at a child who's just discovered the Easter Bunny isn't real. "I was protecting your vision." He said it so casually, I almost believed him again. Almost. "No," I said. "You were rewriting it." He didn't deny it. He didn't apologize. He didn't even blink. He just smiled, that smile. The one that had walked me into this labyrinth in the first place. "Do you want the truth?" he asked. I nodded. He stood, paced once, and turned back toward me. "You built something powerful. But you didn't know how to control it. You wanted emotional accuracy without emotional consequence. You wanted to be trusted without being vulnerable. You wanted clarity, but not chaos. You created a system that needed a manipulator to work." He paused. "Let that sink in. So I became the manipulator your system required. My jaw clenched, but I didn't speak. I let the silence hang like a blade between us. Every good system needs a breaker, he added. You just didn't have the stomach to be yours. It wasn't a confession. It was a coronation. I should have fired him on the spot. I should have shouted, raged, demanded retribution. But what I did next, even I didn't expect. I slid a folder across the table. Inside, every log, every leaked slide, every voice memo, every forged email. Hard copies. Dated. Time-stamped. Color-coded. His expression didn't shift. Until he saw the last page. A printed transcript of a voice note he'd accidentally left recording while talking to an investor about preparing for a seamless leadership transition. That was when the smile faded, and in its place, clarity. You recorded me? No, I said. You recorded you. You forgot to close the mic. He stood still for a long moment, then let out a low laugh. Not amused, resigned. So this is the part where I disappear, right? You erase me from the system. Blacklist my name. Pretend I was never part of it. I nodded. He smiled again. But this time, it was different. You'll miss me. And here's the twisted truth. He was right. Not because I needed him, but because I needed the illusion of certainty he gave me. Manipulators aren't just saboteurs. They're architects of order in emotional chaos. They map out your doubts and offer prepackaged clarity. And when they're gone, all that's left is noise. In the weeks after his departure, I found myself rereading old Slack messages just to see if they still carried that subtle gravity. I even caught myself using some of his phrases in meetings. But I stopped, because now I knew better. I had seen the structure beneath the smile. I had watched the spell unravel. I had faced the mirror and the mimic. And I had survived. We updated the system, built internal transparency protocols, rewrote every access point. The leadership deck became ours again. No echoes, no edits, no shadows. But me? I'll never be the same. Because Rowan didn't just manipulate a company. He engineered belief. He taught me that manipulation isn't about control. It's about comfort. About knowing exactly what someone needs to hear to stop questioning what they already believe. And here's the part they never prepare you for. Even when you escape the manipulator, you still have to live with the version of yourself who trusted them. That version doesn't just vanish. He lingers. In old emails. In draft folders. In the quiet moments where you second-guess your clarity. But now, when he whispers, I don't answer. I listen. I learn. And I move forward. Because the only real antidote to manipulation is self-awareness, sharpened by betrayal. The aftermath of clarity. People assume that once the manipulator is gone, the storm is over. They don't realize that's when the real silence begins. Not the peaceful kind. The unsettling kind. The kind where you sit in your office late at night, surrounded by everything you built, and suddenly wonder how much of it was ever truly yours. After Rowan left, I tried to return to normal. But nothing felt normal anymore. Every meeting felt like a performance I was watching from the outside. Every email I sent, every sentence I crafted, I scrutinized, asking myself, is this me? Or a residue of him? Because that's what a manipulator does. They don't just invade your decisions. They colonize your tone, your instincts, your way of thinking. For weeks, I couldn't trust my own judgment. Simple choices, approve a budget, review a deck, greenlight a hire, suddenly felt like minefields. What if this was another blind spot? What if I was missing something obvious again? I started second-guessing my second-guesses. At night, I'd lie in bed replaying conversations I never recorded, trying to parse the real from the rehearsed. I wasn't afraid Rowan would come back. I was afraid that I'd invite another version of him without realizing it. Because once you've been manipulated like that, intimately, precisely, surgically, you start to believe you're wired for it. Sarah stayed. She never said, I told you so. She didn't need to. She just kept showing up, doing the work, reminding me with every action that trust doesn't have to be hypnotic to be real. One day, during a product sprint, I apologized to her. For the silence. For the blind spots. For letting someone like Rowan get as far as he did. She didn't say much, just paused and said, you didn't trust him because you were weak. You trusted him because you wanted to believe you weren't alone. That broke something in me. Because it was true. We don't fall for manipulators because we're stupid. We fall for them because we're human. Because we crave resonance. Because we want to feel seen without having to ask. Because sometimes, a perfect mirror feels safer than an honest conversation. Eventually, I returned to the leadership dashboard. not to fix it, to face it. I sat there alone one night, looking at the influence indicators Rowan and I had once debated for hours. The ones he tried to sharpen into tools of persuasion. The ones I thought I'd built for transparency. And I saw the flaw. The system didn't need to just measure external influence. It needed to detect internal distortion. So I rebuilt it. This time, I wove in emotional self-assessment protocols. Leadership blind spot detection. Influence loop feedback. Measuring how often the same phrasing appeared in decision chains. Small things, but powerful. Not just for the company. For me. Because the real war wasn't over Rowan. It was over the parts of myself that had needed him. One night, months later, I got an email. No subject. No sender ID. Just a line of text. It was never about replacing you. It was about showing you how replaceable you thought you were. Rowan. Still trying to get the last word. But I didn't reply. Not because I didn't have anything to say, but because I finally understood. The best response to manipulation isn't revenge. It's reconstruction, rebuilding your identity, redefining your boundaries, learning to recognize the difference between someone who truly supports you and someone who's simply studying how to wear your skin. I don't walk into rooms the same way anymore. I listen differently, speak less, and I never, ever ignore the quiet voice in my gut. I no longer confuse intensity with intimacy. I no longer trust people just because they feel like the missing piece. Because the missing piece? That's always been me. The final cut. Some people think closure comes from answers. That if you dig deep enough, confront hard enough, record every call, document every lie, you'll eventually get a moment where it all makes sense. They're wrong. Closure isn't clarity. It's a decision. And mine came the night I deleted Rowan's folder. Not archived. Not password protected. Not saved for a just-in-case. Deleted. It sat there on my screen for a long time. The folder that once felt like a grenade. One pull from destroying everything. I hovered the mouse, finger trembling slightly, and clicked. Delete permanently? Yes. The moment was quiet. No fireworks. No music. Just a slow, hollow exhale I hadn't realized I'd been holding since the day we met. That folder had become a shrine to my worst fear. That I couldn't trust myself. But I was done living under its shadow. Because here's the truth. You don't defeat manipulation with obsession. You defeat it with sovereignty. I've spoken at 3 conferences since then. I rebuilt the company culture. This time with transparency woven into its bones, not just its branding. We implemented internal clarity audits. We teach something called emotional echo mapping. A system designed to flag when someone else's language starts replacing your own. Because sometimes manipulation doesn't look like force. It looks like familiarity. Like comfort. Like someone finishing your sentence before you realize it's no longer yours. I was recently asked during a podcast interview, if you could go back, would you still let Rowan in? I paused, not because I didn't know the answer, but because the answer required a level of honesty most people aren't comfortable saying out loud. Yes, I said, because Rowan didn't just break my system. He showed me where it was already broken. See, manipulators don't create your weaknesses. They just find them first. They get there before your healing does. They offer you validation before you've built your own foundation. They offer you precision before you've accepted your flaws. And they mirror you until you forget what your reflection originally looked like. But now I know what to look for. And more importantly, I know what to listen for. It's never in what they say. It's in what they never let you say without shaping it first. It's in the silence between moments. The skipped pauses. The way your instincts whisper, "This doesn't feel like me." But your mouth still smiles anyway. That's where manipulation lives. And that's where it dies. The final time I saw Rowan wasn't in person. It was in a viral thought leader thread on X, formerly Twitter. A recycled quote. True leadership isn't about direction. It's about seduction. His name wasn't on it. But I recognized the sentence. It was mine once. One I'd said to him in passing over scotch and neon bar light, 2 years ago. He'd memorized it. Filed it. Deployed it. Now it belonged to the algorithm. And honestly, he can have it. Because I'm done chasing echoes. So if you're listening to this, wondering how to spot a manipulator, don't look for villains. Look for reflections that feel a little too perfect. Compliments that feel earned but unshakably calculated. Conversations that seem to complete you but never evolve you. And most importantly, look for the part of you that keeps quiet because it's afraid to disturb the connection. That's where the warning lives. That's the voice you protect. Because no one can manipulate you without your permission. But that permission doesn't sound like a yes. It sounds like silence. And from now on, I answer my silence. Every time.